Hello, and welcome to the Decorum Talking Newspaper for the week ending Saturday, 7th of February, 2026. This is John, and your other readers are Eleanor, Kevin, and Joe. The editor this week is Eleanor. We are all members of Team 5. We are sponsored by Boom Construction, and their message is, we are proud to support Decorum Talking Newspaper. We are a specialist contractor and we pride ourselves on our innovative project solutions and our proactive approach to building and maintaining long-lasting relationships. You can contact us by telephone on 01442 767 760 or at boomconstruction.co.uk. Most of our news items are taken from the Hemel, Hempstead, Berkhamsted and Tring Gazette and Express newspaper. All telephone numbers are on the local code of 01442 unless stated otherwise. This week's headlines are Abuse of Recycling Centres to be Tackled, Power of Art Revealed, A Celebration of History, Complaints to Hospital Trust, and Appointment of Principal. These and other stories follow. Here is the news.
Hello, this is Eleanor. Hertfordshire Waste officials have drawn up cost-cutting plans that would require residents to register for an e-pass to access the county's network of recycling centres. For the past 2 years, anyone using one of the county's 16 sites has had to prove they live in Hertfordshire or that they have permission to use the service. But checks at the centres have been dependent on staff being available and, officials say, have not been consistently applied. Now, waste chiefs have drawn up plans for an e-pass system that, with the use of ANPR cameras, would immediately alert recycling centre staff if an unregistered vehicle was on the site. That would enable them to turn away those sneaking in from neighbouring authorities without a reciprocal agreement, or those seeking to dispose of business waste liable for a commercial charge. On Monday, January the 25th, the proposal was backed by a meeting of the County Council's Environment, Transport and Growth Cabinet panel. If approved by a meeting of the Council's Cabinet on February the 16th, it will be introduced as soon as practically possible. Executive Member for Environment, Growth and Transport, Councillor Paul Zukoski, says the introduction of the e-pass would limit access to those who are legitimately allowed to use the recycling centres, but he also points to the high levels of abuse targeted at staff, with surveys suggesting nearly all of those working at the centres experience regular abuse. And he suggests that the introduction of the e-pass system could also be used to protect staff. It's pretty obvious that there are residents from outside of Hertfordshire that are using Hertfordshire recycling centres to get rid of their rubbish, and Hertfordshire residents are paying for it. Councillor Zukoski told Local Democracy Reporting Service, the e-pass will limit access to people who are funding the system, so what it means is that we can reasonably certain that people depositing waste are Hertfordshire residents who have paid their council tax to use the system. At a fundamental level, it's as simple as that. The second aspect is, because you have a car registration, you have a mechanism to identify who an individual user is. So if they are abusive or assault one of our members of staff, we can prevent them from using the service or give a temporary ban. The introduction of the e-passes would not, say officials, require users to book a slot or introduce additional restrictions. Applications for the passes, valid for 3 years, would take only a few minutes. And at the meeting, it was stressed that there would be help available by phone or at the recycling centres for those residents unable to register for an e-pass themselves. Public concerns that the charge may lead to an increase in fly tipping were highlighted as part of the consultation on the proposals. But councillors were told there is no evidence that demand management measures increased fly tipping activity. Meanwhile, plans have also been drawn up to charge residents for a new service at recycling centres that would deal with excess DIY waste. Under current legislation, many DIY waste types are classed as industrial waste, even if they're generated at home. The County Council's recycling centres will only accept up to 100 litres of DIY waste, or a single item measuring no more than 200 centimetres by 75 centimetres by 70 centimetres. But under the latest council plans, the centres would accept larger amounts of excess DIY waste for an additional charge, rather than turning residents away.
Hello, this is Kevin reading. James Lark, an art teacher, writes, "For over 20 years, my life revolved around the classroom. As an art teacher and later assistant head teacher at a secondary school, I was passionate about education, creativity, and supporting young people. Teaching was demanding, but deeply rewarding until a sudden and life-changing moment forced me to stop and rethink everything. In January 2025, aged just 43, I suffered a heart attack. It was an unexpected, frightening, and completely halted the pace of life I had been living. Recovery wasn't just physical, it was emotional and mental too. During that period, I turned instinctively to what I knew best, making art. Concentrating on producing artwork became a crucial part of my healing. The act of drawing and painting helped quiet my thoughts, reduce anxiety, and rebuild confidence at a time when everything felt uncertain. That experience was a turning point. It made me reflect on the stresses of teaching and leadership and on how powerful creativity had been in my own recovery. I realized I wanted to create space for others to experience the same benefits. That decision led me to step away from teaching and start my own business, one built around using art and creativity to support well-being and positive mental health. Today, my business champions the impact of art on well-being in many forms. I lead welcoming art classes, workshops, and relaxed social events designed to help people slow down, connect, and enjoy the process of creating without pressures. Alongside this, I continue to work as a professional artist, sharing my own practice. A core part of my work is making creativity accessible. I actively seek to engage disadvantaged and vulnerable people by working with charities to deliver art sessions that remove barriers to participation. My first of these took place in January in Abbots Langley, working with the Alzheimer's Society, using art as a gentle, inclusive way to support connection and well-being. Art classes are now run regularly in both Abbots Langley and Kings Langley, offering oil painting, watercolour painting, and expressive drawing. These sessions are more about learning techniques. They're about creating time for yourself, building confidence, and discovering how creativity activity can positively impact everyday life. What began as a personal recovery journey has grown into a mission to show that art isn't just something you're good or bad at, but something that can genuinely support well-being at any stage of life. www.ohmyart.co.uk gives more information about what we offer and the work we do within the local community.
This is Joe. A new book is set to be released celebrating Berkhamsted's history by promoting 50 of its most famous buildings. Coming out this month, Berkhamsted in 50 Buildings by Paul Rabitz and Peter Jeffrey shows how the changing use of its most important buildings reveal a lot about the town. This is the latest book that Amberley Publishing has created, looking at a town through some of its best known and oldest properties. Berkhamsted is described by the publisher as a lively town in the Chiltern Hills, with a history stretching back to before the Anglo-Saxons. Historians have found that substantial ruins from its Norman castle remain and can be tied to the Black Prince and Geoffrey Chaucer. Berkhamsted School was founded in 1541, and the High Street and the medieval core of the town contain numerous ancient and listed buildings, many of which are timber framed. The book also explains how strong links to London and the Midlands allowed the town to develop and evolve, highlighting the importance of the Grand Junction Canal. The Victorian Town Hall still stands, saved from demolition in the 1980s, as does writer Graham Greene's birthplace and more modern buildings, including the popular Art Deco Rex Cinema. Other buildings showcased include famous former and current pubs, plus long-standing churches and former courthouses. The book has been designed to appeal to current residents and those with a fond interest in Berkhamsted. Dr. Paul Rabbits has over 35 years of experience in designing, managing and restoring public urban parks across the UK. He has written books about Sir Christopher Wren and Decimus Burton, as well as some of the UK's most famous parks. Peter Jeffrey is a retired architect who now applies his architectural eye and his lifelong interest in photography to documenting important historic buildings before, during, and after conservation or restoration.
Complaints against a hospital trust in Hertfordshire rose by 52% last year, with attitude and behaviour of staff cited as the top cause for complaint. West Hart's Teaching Hospital, NHS Trust, is responsible for three hospitals in the region: Watford General Hospital, St Albans City Hospital, and Hemel Hempstead Hospital. The Trust's Patient Advice and Liaison Services, that's PALS for short, recorded 269 complaints from April the 1st to September the 30th, 2025, an increase of 52% compared with the same period in 2024. According to a report from Chief Nurse Kelly McGovern, submitted to the Trust's board meeting last week, attitude and behaviour of staff is the highest theme for complaints received, accounting for 154 complaints. Competence followed in second place with 45 complaints, while 21 complaints were submitted over clinical treatment. Partially upheld complaints included one new mother who cited poor communication, saying, "No one explained what was happening with the baby while they were in theatre, and when the baby was taken to special care baby unit." Another partially upheld complaint was focused on poor staff attitudes, claiming staff were dismissive, did not handle the patient properly, and made them feel belittled and humiliated. Yet another blasted A&E staff as unprofessional and described communications issues with a consultant during planning of a birth. It was noted that patients' contact with PALS had increased to 1,931 over the period, up 1,404 from the previous year. Although 269 complaints were lodged, 272 compliments were received during the same period, mentioning staff's kindness, compassion, commitment, and going the extra mile. The West Hart's Teaching Hospital's NHS Trust spokesman said, "Listening to and learning from our patient remains central to improving their experience and the care we provide." Over the last 6 months, the Trust received 269 complaints out of 440,000 visits to our hospitals. The number of complaints from April 1, 2025 to September 2025 reflects the increase in patient contact with our patient advice and liaison service, with increase of 1,404 patient contacts during the same period. Complaints range from issues such as coordination of clinical treatment, lack of clear communication or explanation, failed discharge, wording of letters, lost property, and staff behaviour. The PAL service works with patients, relatives, or carers to resolve concerns in the first instance, avoiding the need to engage in a formal complaint process. The Trust ensures robust governance in monitoring compliance with statutory requirements, the effectiveness of local resolution processes, and that lessons are learned from patient experiences across the organisation to improve the quality and safety and compassion of care, while ensuring that patient voices are influencing service quality, safety, and the overall patient experience.
Tring Park School for the Performing Arts, the world-renowned vocational school in Hertfordshire, has announced the appointment of new principal Andrew McGarver. The appointment marks an exciting new phase for the school as it continues to deliver exceptional academic standards, world-class vocational training, and outstanding pastoral care. Andrew brings impressive leadership experience spanning boarding, day, single-sex, and international schools in the UK, Jersey, and Japan. On the vocational side, as well as previous roles as director of music at two schools, Andrew has been a professional violinist, conductor, and performer, collaborating with leading musicians in the UK and internationally. Andrew is currently at Morrison's Academy in Scotland, a thriving co-educational independent school where he's been rector since August 2021. Throughout his career, Andrew has placed teaching and learning at the heart of his leadership, and at Morrison's he has created a culture of teachers as learners, which supports staff through professional learning, enabling them to provide the very best educational experiences for their students. Andrew comments on accepting the role, "I am delighted to be joining Tring Park School for the Performing Arts, a school with an exceptional national and international reputation. Tring Park's commitment to a truly integrated academic and vocational education brings together everything I value about education. It's a privilege to take on the role of principal, and I very much look forward to working with students, staff, families, and governors to build on the school's remarkable strengths and to lead the next chapter of its story." Mark Hewitt, Chair of Governors at Tring Park School, says, "After working hard to find the right fit, my fellow governors and I are excited by the prospect of Andrew joining us at Tring Park School. We are confident that he will be a strong and empathetic leader who will help drive the school forward, working with and inspiring our excellent academic, vocational and support staff teams." Succeeding Simon Larter Evans, who stepped down as principal last term, Andrew is committed to ensuring a smooth and stable transition from his current position. A provisional start date is set for January 2027. In the meantime, Tring Park School will continue to be in safe hands with its experienced senior leadership team and governors at the helm. Home to the new CBBC entertainment documentary series Stage Stars, Tring Park School welcomes day and boarding students aged 7 to 19 years, offering classes led by expert teaching staff and experienced industry professionals. With an emphasis on excellence in both academics and performance, the school ensures every student has space to reach their full potential.
And now, what happened this week in history? February the 8th, 1931, James Dean, cult actor, was born in Marion, Indiana. He made just three films, East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant, before he died in a car crash. On this day last year, Hamas released three Israeli hostages for 183 Palestinian prisoners in an exchange of a ceasefire agreement that had paused 16 months of war in Gaza. February the 9th, 1981, rock and roller Bill Haley died. He spearheaded the 1950s rock revolution with Rock Around the Clock. February the 10th, 1962, in Berlin, US spy plane pilot Gary Powers, shot down by the Russians, was exchanged for KGB agent Rudolf Abel, captured in New York 5 years earlier. On this day last year, Burnley MP Oliver Ryan was suspended by Labour over his membership of a WhatsApp group containing offensive comments. February the 11th, 1929, the 109 acres of the Vatican in Rome was made an independent sovereign state under the Lateran Treaty. On this day last year, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu threatened to withdraw from the ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and resume the fight against Hamas if the militant group did not go ahead with the next scheduled release of hostages on the following Saturday.
David Taylor MP has welcomed the Labour government's announcement that ground rents will be capped at £250 a year, calling it a long overdue step that will make a real difference to leaseholders in Hemel Hempstead. Prime Minister Keir Starmer and the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Steve Reid, confirmed the cap as part of a wider package of measures. Hemel's MP Mr Taylor said the change will bring relief to families who have faced unfair and escalating charges for years. He said, "I have met many local residents who have been ripped off for far too long. This cap will save some families hundreds of pounds a year and finally puts an end to one of the worst injustices in the leasehold system." The MP also welcomed the government's commitment to ban new leasehold flats, delivering on Labour's manifesto pledge to bring to an end the outdated leasehold model. He added, "This important action to support leaseholders with the cost of living comes after years of inaction and neglect from the Conservatives." Meanwhile, the Green Party didn't even mention leasehold in their manifesto. This is change that only a Labour government can bring about. Alongside the cap, the government has published the draft Common Hold and Leasehold Reform Bill, which will strengthen the rights and protections of more than 5 million leaseholders. The moving to Common Hold consultation has also opened, giving the people the chance to shape the next phase of reform. The announcement also builds on the recently passed Renters' Rights Act and Labour's landmark planning reforms aimed at ensuring everyone has a safe and secure home. The Prime Minister said, "Good news for homeowners, we're capping ground rent at £250. That means if you are a leaseholder and your ground rent is more than £250, you'll be paying less. And I've spoken to so many people who say this will make a difference to them of hundreds of pounds. That's really important because the cost of living is the single most important thing across the country. So this is a promise that we said we'd deliver, and I'm really pleased that we're delivering on that promise."
Calls for 20 miles per hour to be the default speed limit outside Hertfordshire schools have been considered by county councillors. Labour councillor Alistair Willoughby had proposed the change at a recent meeting of the county council, pointing to evidence that it could reduce accidents, improve air quality, and encourage active travel. Last Monday, his motion was considered by a meeting of the Council's Environment, Transport and Growth Cabinet Panel. According to County Council data, around 138 children aged between 5 and 16 are likely to have been injured on the way to or from one of the county's 536 schools over the past 5 years. And just 96 of Hertfordshire's 536 schools are within 20 mile per hour zones, with consultation currently ongoing that could lead to speed reductions outside a further 67. In his motion, Councillor Willoughby suggests that children are the most vulnerable road users and that collision severity increases significantly at speeds above 20 miles per hour. He highlights the many schools on roads with speed limits in excess of 20 miles per hour, pointing to evidence that 20 miles per hour speed limits near schools reduce accidents, improve air quality, and encourage active travel. He wants a default 20 miles per hour speed limit on all roads directly adjacent to the main entrance of a school, with exceptions only where it would be impractical, unsafe, or counterproductive. Presenting the motion to the Cabinet panel on Monday, Councillor Willoughby said, and it's quoted, "I think it's important for the safety of students that we move to 20 miles per hour outside of schools, because effectively, obviously, being able to cross the road, being able to get into a community safely, especially for younger children, is paramount. However, in response to the motion, a report by council officers suggested that focusing funding on default 20 mile per hour restrictions outside schools could be to the detriment of wider safety improvements on the network used by children travelling to school."
Continuing the story, it suggested that a number of school sites on main corridors or dual carriageways would be likely to be inappropriate for 20 mile per hour limits. And it said that most of the children injured while walking or cycling to or from school over the past 5 years were more than 250 metres from their schools. In detail, data presented to councillors suggested that 42 of the 138 injured children, 30%, were within 250 metres of their schools. Nine of those were said to be seriously injured. In the report, officers also highlighted the county's Safer Routes to School programme, which supports measures such as raised crossings near schools to reduce traffic speeds and to make crossing the road safer. And they pointed to a new approach to the delivery of 20 miles per hour that is being trialled to cover more of network in areas with higher housing densities and community activity. The issues around traffic speed and exposure to road danger at school times tend to be on streets within the school catchment area, not only by the school gates, says the report. Many school locations require children to cross busier roads on the journey to school than the road where the school is located, which can often be slower and in some instances have lower traffic levels. At the meeting, councillors heard that it was already policy to ensure that every new school and those with major housing developments had a 20 mile per hour limit zone where possible. And the report also highlighted existing advisory 20 mile per hour schemes, which are operational around schools at drop-off and pick-up times only.
TV presenter Chris Packham has made an urgent appeal for dog lovers in Hemel Hempstead and Berkhamsted to consider becoming a volunteer puppy trainer for national charity Hearing Dogs for Deaf People and radically transform the lives of someone who is deaf or has hearing loss. Chris, who is a long-time supporter of Hearing Dogs, said in a film created by the charity, I have hearing loss myself, so I always had an empathy for people whose hearing loss is more significant than my own. Hearing dogs are not only brilliant companions, which is invaluable, as very often deafness can lead to isolation. They also communicate important and often life-saving sounds, like smoke alarms, to their deaf partners. To see a hearing dog in action is absolutely inspirational. The charity's volunteer puppy trainers perform such a valuable role, but hand on heart, we don't have enough. So I would urge anyone who has time to spare and who would like to radically transform a deaf person's life to visit the volunteering page of the charity's website at hearingdocs.org.uk. Miniature poodles, Chris's favourite breed, makes perfect hearing dogs because they are extremely clever and quick to learn. In the film, Chris is pictured chatting to one of the charity's volunteer puppy trainers, Kate Medlock, who is currently looking after a six-month-old black miniature poodle called Theo. Kate said, "I became a volunteer puppy trainer for hearing dogs 8 years ago, and I love it. What I've been so impressed with is the support you get from the trainers and the ability to learn so much about dog behaviour. You don't need any previous skills and experience. The charity will teach you everything you need to know. I've also had the opportunity to meet recipients of the dogs I've trained, and we've formed quite close friendships. Hearing about the difference the dogs make to their lives makes saying goodbye worthwhile. I'm totally convinced by the value of this charity."
Continuing, according to the Royal National Institute for Deaf People, the RNID, around 1 in 3 people in the UK are now deaf, have hearing loss or tinnitus. Many of these people are struggling to take part in conversations, even with friends and family, leading to social withdrawal, isolation, and an increased risk of anxiety or depression. In addition, the fear of missing important and often life-saving sounds such as smoke and fire alarms, intruder alarms, the alarm clock, and even baby monitors can leave deaf people feeling vulnerable and unsafe. When fully trained, hearing dogs not only provide practical assistance by alerting deaf people to these important sounds, but also offer love and emotional support to help reduce isolation and loneliness. The charity is fortunate to have a nationwide network of dedicated volunteers who help train the puppies that will go on to transform a deaf person's life. Volunteering as a trainer involves caring for a puppy in your home for between 6 and 18 months at a time and getting them started on their training journey. From basic cues like sit, down and wait to experiencing different sights, smells and environments. All volunteer puppy trainers are fully supported by a dedicated team of the Hearing Dogs Training Department, and all costs are covered by the charity. Lisa Mello, volunteering manager at Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, said, "Our volunteers are at the heart of everything we do, and we're now looking for kind, committed individuals or families in the local area who can offer a loving, temporary home to one of our adorable puppies and help them begin their training journey. You'll attend a fun weekly puppy training class, get to meet other people doing the same thing, have all the costs covered, and most importantly, get to train a puppy that will go on to completely transform the life of a deaf person. No prior experience is needed, just a love of dogs, enough time every day to dedicate to the pup, and a willingness to learn about dog training. Anyone who wants to find out more about becoming a volunteer puppy trainer can visit hearingdogs.org.uk/volunteer-puppies. Contact the volunteering team directly at volunteer@hearingdogs.org.uk or call 01844 348 129.
Hertfordshire County Council is to create a £135,000 a year role for a programme director to manage local government reorganisation in Hertfordshire, known as LGR. By April 2028, the authority and the 10 district boroughs are expected to be replaced by a smaller number of unitary authorities. On Tuesday, January the 28th, plans to recruit an LGR transition programme director were given the go-ahead. Although the role will be based within the County Council, the successful candidate will be directed by the chief executives of all 11 existing councils. The role, with an expected salary of between £121,449 and £134,011, will be funded equally by the authorities. According to the job specification shared with the County Council's Employment Committee last Tuesday, candidates will need to have a proven track record of leading large-scale, complex transformation reorganisation programmes. And they will need to show experience working at a senior leadership level. Once in the role, they will be directly responsible for a delivery team, including project managers, officers, support and business analysts, and a budget of around £2 million. This post offers an exciting opportunity to support the design and implement new unitary authorities, shaping public services, governance, and outcomes for generations to come, says the job outline. On behalf of Hertfordshire's 11 councils, the programme director will provide strategic leadership and programme oversight for Hertfordshire's local government reorganisation. This role ensures that the transition to new government governance arrangements is well planned, coordinated and executed effectively, delivering improved services, stronger governance and long-term financial sustainability. We are looking for a senior leader with a strong record of leading large-scale transformation, operating confidently in political environments, driving decision-making and delivering outcomes that make a real difference to citizens. This role demands imagination, delivery focus, and the ability to navigate political complexity while inspiring others to visualise and build a better future. The successful candidate is expected to be appointed by April, with a start date between April and June, depending on their notice period. The appointment will be for 24 months, with potential to extend. At the meeting of the Employment Committee leader of the County Council, Councillor Steve Jarvis, said the role was required so councils can remain focused on the delivery of existing services. He said it was important to minimise the impact of the LGR process on day-to-day activities. He acknowledged that until now existing council staff had completed the work on LGR, but suggested that becomes increasingly unrealistic. He told the committee it was entirely appropriate to recruit the new role rather than asking senior council officers to do the work in addition to their usual demands.
The Titanic did not just sink into the Atlantic, it sank into the collective consciousness of the nation, leaving ripples that reached even the heart of Hertfordshire. While the disaster is often associated with the great maritime ports, Hemel Hempstead holds a unique and lasting link to the legend. Local residents may remember that Johnny Phillips, a former student of Cavendish School here in Hemel Hempstead, was the man responsible for bringing one of the disaster's most pivotal figures to the silver screen. Phillips portrayed Second Officer Charles Lightoller, the most senior officer to survive the sinking, in James Cameron's 1997 blockbuster. Through his performance, Hemel Hempstead's own talent helped immortalise the bravery and chaos of that fateful night for a global audience. Now in 2026, a new voice rises from the depths to ask the questions that still haunt us. Malcolm Tilsed's latest poetry collection, Titanic Conspiracy Beneath the Waves, is more than historical retelling. It is an immersive journey into the emotional truths and conspiracies that have long been buried under the weight of the ocean. Drawing on survivor testimonies and a lifetime of maritime fascination, Tilsed weaves a narrative that resonates with the resilience and the search for truth that defines our town. Titanic Conspiracy Beneath the Waves is available now at Amazon, Waterstones, Brown's Books, bookshop.org, and all good local bookstores across Hemel Hempstead.
A Hertfordshire farmer has welcomed calls in the House of Lords for urgent changes to tackling mega-scale fly tipping, with waste crime now costing the economy more than £1 billion a year, according to government data. Fly tipping is a major issue for farmers and growers in Hertfordshire, and the NFU, that's the National Farmers Union, has long called for a shake-up of how the crime is dealt with. The county was in the national media last summer when more than 200 tonnes of waste were dumped on a farm, leaving the farmer a bill of more than £40,000 in clear-up costs. In the House of Lords last month, Shadow Environment Minister Lord Blencathra said, "Fly tipping is now a national organised crime on a mega scale, costing the economy over £1 billion per year." Baroness Hayman of ULUK said, "It is important to say quite clearly that the government do not believe that the status quo is working. We need to make changes because it is getting out of control. We are looking at the best ways that we can make changes to improve the situation." Baroness Hayman, who is Parliamentary Under Secretary of State for DEFRA, said, "The government is committed to digital waste tackling and other technology-based opportunities to tackle waste crime." Speaking after the debate, NFU member and Hertfordshire arable farmer Will Dickinson said, "I am pleased to see this issue being discussed in the House of Lords and getting this spotlight. I fully agree that fly tipping is out of control, and it is promising to hear the government acknowledge that change is needed. We cannot continue to have criminal gangs causing such damage to the countryside with impunity." The NFU welcomes news that the government is committed to digital waste tracking, but say it is important that such schemes are affordable and widely available. The NFU is calling for all authorities with responsibility for tackling fly tipping to work closely together to secure more arrests and convictions, and for penalties to be more proportionate, reflecting the impact of the crime. The NFU is also asking for a simple reporting mechanism to be developed so that farmers and land managers only have to report a fly tipping incident once. Currently, victims may have to report incidents to multiple authorities, which is time consuming, confusing and frustrating. The NFU believes the government and waste sector must do more to raise awareness of householders' responsibilities for their waste. Too much householder waste falls into the hands of third parties who then fly tip that material. Mr. Dickinson said, "Individual farmers are having to pay tens of thousands of pounds to clear rubbish dumped on their land, despite being the victims of this crime. National fly tipping costs the farming industry tens of millions of pounds and the wider economy more than £1 billion. The crime also damages the environment and impacts our ability to feed the nation. We are working well with local authorities here, but they do not currently have the resources to deal with this. The NFU will continue to engage and to push for change at a national level and here in Hertfordshire."
Now we come to the information slot. This is followed by the obituaries, what's on, further news and sports. A message from Hertfordshire Constabulary. Protruding key barrels on doors. We are writing to advise you to look at your front and back doors. This mainly concerns the double glazing style, which includes a cylinder barrel for the key. Many doors have this protruding from the door, which are a burglar's delight, who have made a tool that can snap these off, which enables them to open the door. This is not a new development, but a reminder of what burglars will do to try to gain access. Some of the door barrels can be adjusted so that they are flush with the outside of the door. Others may need a new cylinder. Please have a look, check, and think whether you feel it is appropriate to adjust or change the lock.
GP surgery phone call scam. Hearts Police have alerted us to an active phone call scam. When you answer the phone, you hear a recorded voice purporting to be from the NHS or your local GP surgery. The message informs you that your details at the surgery are out of date and that unless you update them, you will be removed from their list. The message then encourages you to go to a website or to press a number button where you will be requested to give your personal details. This is a scam. If you receive such a call, put the phone down. And to set your mind at rest, call your surgery to check your details. To report an incident of cybercrime or fraud, and for further information, visit the Report Fraud website at www.reportfraud.police.uk.
The obituaries on the family announcement page this week are John Ronald Carlton Ashton, aged 90 years, and Priscilla Rose Pierce, known as Cilla, aged 87 years. May they both rest in peace.
And now what's on? Music. From Gold to Rio, the greatest hits of Spandau Ballet and Duran Duran. At the Eric Morecambe Centre, Harpenden, February the 6th. Celebrate two titans of the new romantic movement with 2 hours of non-stop classics, including Gold, Rio, True, The Reflex, Through the Barricades and Lifeline. Call 01582 767 525 to book. A Foreigner's Journey at the Eric Morecambe Centre, Harpenden, February the 7th. Bringing together the hits of Foreigner and Journey, the show features rock classics including Don't Stop Believing, Cold as Ice, Separate Ways and Jukebox Hero. Call 01582 767 525 to book. And in comedy, Russell Hicks, The Time It's Personal. Old Town Hall, Hemel Hempstead, February the 6th and 7th. It's been a big year for Russell. He's appearing in multiple feature films, including Edgar Wright's The Running Man, 2025, and Maintenance Required on Amazon. His Dear Diary series on Instagram has gained millions of views. Now the London-based American is back on tour. The provocative and exuberant comedian, known for his masterful improvisation, has appeared on Channel 4, BBC and ITV and has headlined at every major club across the UK, including The Standard, Glee Club and Up the Creek, and holds a residency at Top Secret Comedy Club in London. Last year's show was about his life in the UK. This year it's all about him. Call 01442 228091 to book. And music again, Jackie Dankworth, the Sondheim Springbok book, Watford Palace Theatre, February the 12th. Internationally acclaimed vocalist Jackie Dankworth presents a special and intimate celebration of the remarkable music legacy of Stephen Sondheim. Call 01923 225671 to book.
Wednesday, the 11th of February at 8 p.m. Berkhamsted in 50 buildings. Berkhamsted Local History and Museum Society presents a talk by Paul Rabbits in the Civic Centre on Berkhamsted High Street. Discover the history of our town and how it developed by way of 50 buildings. Paul has written many books and his latest, Berkhamsted in 50 Buildings, should be available in time for this talk. Non-members are always welcome, £5 at the door, or join BLHMS on the night. Berkhamsted Artisan Market. Berkhamsted Artisan Market is back in 2026. Held on the second Sunday of each month, the High Street is filled with quirky and creative stalls offering handcrafted gifts, household items, wellness products, food and drink, and more. The first market of 2026 is coming up on Sunday the 8th of March. Thanks to the tireless organisation by Anne Foster, all the pitch fees from the market will go towards the Friends of St Peter's, the charity dedicated to preserving Berkhamsted's historic sites, St Peter's Church, Rectory Lane, Cemetery and the Town Hall. We are so lucky to enjoy such a creative vibe in our town, so do please support these monthly community events and help the work of the Friends. Follow Berkhamsted Artisan Market on Facebook.
A message from St. Peter's Church, Berkhamsted. Roof vandals. We are sad to report that just 3 days after the scaffolding going up, we have had an incursion by teenage boys onto the scaffolding who have left graffiti on the church roof. The alarm went off and neighbours alerted the police. We are aware of photos circulating on social media of the vandals, and these have been passed to the police. The illustrious names of Reverend Johnson, Pearson, Penny and Rue inscribed on the roof are now joined by a rather less illustrious graffiti tag. We thank our neighbours for their vigilance and ask everyone to keep an eye out for any intruders on the scaffolding or roof. If you see anyone who shouldn't be there, please call 999. For non-emergency police contact, call 101, quoting incident number HC2001-2020-0695. That's HC2001-2020-0695. We also ask parents to try to be aware of their teens' whereabouts at night. Aside from anything else, the roof is extremely slippery in wet weather, and a night on the tiles is strongly discouraged.
Last Tuesday, the 27th of January, was Holocaust Memorial Day. To commemorate the day, the Forum building in Hemel was lit up in purple and residents were invited to place a candle in their window at 8 p.m. A service was held at St Mary's Church in Hemel Old Town, arranged by Reverend John Williams and Councillor Jonathan Gale, and was attended by local residents and councillors, including the Mayor of Decorum, Councillor Catherine McAruvey, and the Leader of the Council, Councillor Sally Symington. Hemel Old Town Hall are delighted to confirm that the statue of Afterlife's Aunt Tilly has been lovingly restored and is now safely back in Hemel Old Town. After being temporarily moved to the Old Town Hall to protect her from further damage, it became clear that she was very happy there. For now, Aunt Tilly will remain indoors, warm and well cared for, where she can be enjoyed by everyone. And in the future, she may even venture further afield for some days out. You can visit her in the foyer of the Old Town Hall, where she is ready to welcome visitors.
And in football, Hemel Hempstead Town striker Millar Matthews-Lewis has been rewarded for a terrific season so far by securing a move to League One side Burton Albion. Matthews-Lewis, 21, has joined the Brewers on a 2.5-year contract with additional 12-month club option for an undisclosed fee. Having started his career in the academy at Luton Town, Matthews-Lewis joined the Tudors last summer and scored 12 goals in 26 league games for Lee Allison's men as they push for promotion. That form alerted Albion, whose boss Gary Bowyer was delighted to have recruited him. He said, "I'm delighted to welcome Miller to the club. He's had a good season so far and we see the potential for him to develop further. Miller can score all types of goals and is really keen to learn. Having spoken with him on the phone, he has a great desire to succeed and make the step up." Matthews-Lewis also emphasised his pleasure at the move, saying, "It's a dream come true for me. I can't wait to get started. This level of football is the one that I feel will really get the best out of me, and I can't wait to get to work with the lads here." Matthews-Lewis will be eligible for the first time this weekend when Burton take on Port Vale. Tudor's boss, Allinson, said, "We never want to lose good players, but at the same time, I'm a manager who loves to see players progress. And if I've helped even 1% to see a player change his life and become a professional footballer, then I will sleep well at night. As a football club, we will never stand in the way of progression. I'm sure some supporters will be disappointed as Mills was having a great season, but he has now changed his life. He's living the dream as a professional, and we need to remember the great times he has given us. I wish Mills every success, and I'm going to miss him, as I'm sure players and supporters will. But what an opportunity."
Basketball. Hemel Storm's difficult weekend on the road ended in a pair of defeats, despite the best efforts of Tom Baker's team. First up was a 104-85 loss to the Breakers in Milton Keynes on Saturday, in a game Storm led at half-time. Then they were second best in Birmingham on Sunday, defeated 90-82 by the Rockets. Performance levels are at least on an upward trend, and Storm feel closer than ever to ending a winless run now spanning 8 games. They remained aside stripped of confidence and are struggling to piece together 40 minutes of polished basketball to get them over that winning line. They fell behind early in Milton Keynes on Saturday, but clawed their way back into the game thanks to an inspired second quarter, scoring 33 points to lead by one at the half, 54-53. Jack Purnell was instrumental in that success, connecting with a trio of consecutive three-pointers and racking up 14 points across the quarter. They couldn't hold on to that slender advantage, though, and the Breakers roared back to take the third period by 8 points as Storm's offence came unstuck. And Milton Keynes sealed the win with a dominant fourth quarter as Storm's attention perhaps drifted to the following day's duties. The score, as the final buzzer sounded, read 104-85 points, with the Breakers winning. Matt Norman top scored with 20, despite spending large periods of the game off the court with a cut on his face, and Kai Walker battled hard to claim a 19-point, 12-rebound double-double. Their trip to Birmingham on Sunday saw them face the Rockets for the second weekend in a row, and the Midland side sealed a 3-0 sweep of victories across the season. It was Storm who took the first period, 19-18, but the Rockets took control of the game in the second. They won it by 9, and Storm trailed by 8 at the half, 44-36. It seemed to be slipping further away for Storm as Birmingham extended their lead to 12 by the end of the third quarter, but Baker's men came close to a memorable comeback in the final period. They upped the ante on defence and harried the Rockets into a string of turnovers, hauling the deficit back to 2 with a layup from the impressive Dejani Parkinson. But they couldn't quite rein the Rockets in, who held their nerve to secure a 6th consecutive victory. Parkinson's energy off the bench earned him 16 points, while Vernon Eze also brought plenty of life at both ends of the court, claiming 15 points of his own. Next up for Storm is a trip to Bristol on Saturday as they take on the Flyers.
We're coming to the end of this week's news. Sunrise and sunset times for this week are 7:29 a.m. and 5:03 p.m. For those with access to the internet, our news is uploaded to our website soon after the recording each week on Thursday evening. This can be found by visiting dtnhemel.org.uk. If you wish to listen on Alexa, say, "Alexa, open the Talking Newspaper skill." Alexa will ask you which broadcast you want to listen to. When prompted, reply, "Play the Decorum Talking Newspaper." This part can be tricky. If Alexa offers the wrong station, just say no and then try again. For those who are listening to this week's news via a memory stick, after the music, there is the amenities section that gives details of various groups and the contact details of organisations. Please remove your memory stick carefully from the player and return it to us in the pouch provided. Seal it up firmly. Turn the label over and post it back to us using any Royal Mail postbox. No stamp is required. Thank you for listening. Until next time, it's goodbye from all your readers, the editor, and Jake, your technician for this week. Goodbye.